If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We have been discussing some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei, and we'd like to continue along the same line. Let me ask you this question at the beginning of this episode, Sheikh. While standing or walking in the streets, we sometimes face a scenario which is quite common. Like we are sometimes splashed with rainwater in the puddles or from the puddles that have been created, in fact, because of that rainfall. When, passing cars actually drive through the streets, especially at high speed, the liquid occasionally spills from the garbage trucks or sanitation trucks may get splashed onto our clothes. So are these liquids to be treated as canonically and ritually impure?
That's a very good question. Well, it depends on where you are and which country you live in.
Yes.
And where exactly you are. It's very important. I've been to some countries, I don't want to name them. There's no sewage system in those countries. So people defecate openly in the open space. And there's urine, there's human feces everywhere. And definitely this contamination spreads from the street to other places, from the houses to the street. And this, we cannot give a general opinion, a general rule regarding this issue. But the basic principle is that if you live in a country where you have no information about, for example, the streets of Iran. The general principle or the basic principle in Islamic law is that everything is pure unless you become 100% sure that it is impure.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a principle of fiqh that makes things easy for you, that facilitates things for you. And this is the aim, to make things easy for the duty-bound person. Everything is clean and ritually pure for you unless you become certain that it is impure.
After all, all laws everywhere, whether they're man-made or God's made, or God-given, they are supposed to facilitate our life.
You're right.
Not to make it more difficult.
Of course. So unless you are certain that the splashed water or liquid contains impurities such as urine, blood, or najis substances, impure substances, you must treat it as pure. This is the duty, basic.
Okay. Yes.
For example, rainwater mixed with soil and splashed by car remains pure.
Yeah.
Usually this is the case with the Iranian street, as far as I know. Even if the dirt is very dark in color, it doesn't mean that it is impure. Maybe it is very dirty, it's very unhealthy, but it's not impure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the same in the same vein, for example, water or liquid from a garbage truck should be considered pure unless you are absolutely sure that it contains najasa. Okay.
Yes.
You cannot verify that the truck which carries garbage carries something impure.
Mm-hmm.
Normally the trucks carry plastic bags, food items and things like that.
Of course. What about the non-Islamic countries then?
And the same is the case with non-Islamic countries.
Should the Najas be proven to you?
No, no, it's not necessary. The same principle is applicable to people living...
You mean everything is pure unless proven otherwise?
Even if you live in a country like India and Southeast Asian countries, which are prominently Buddhist, but who knows, you cannot be 100% sure that that thing on the street is impure. Okay?
Yes.
The vegetable you eat in the restaurants is impure. Or maybe the food that you eat. If the food does not contain meat, it's permissible to eat it. Even if there is a strong possibility that the food might have been touched by a Hindu.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Let's take a break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Stick around.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Well, Sheikh Javid, are we allowed to consume the meat of a canonically edible animal if we cannot verify whether it's been slaughtered legitimately or in accordance with the rules prescribed by the Islamic laws?
Right. Well, the ruling depends on the source of the meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the meat is purchased from a Muslim seller or Muslim market, it is deemed pure.
Yes.
And permissible to eat.
Yes.
Because you received it, you bought it from a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessary for you to verify it. And you bought it from a Muslim market. Because generally Muslims, 99% of Muslims, they observe law, they practice the law and the Islamic Sharia, even when it comes to meat and slaughtering animals. And of course, when meat is provided and purchased from a Muslim market, we assume that a Muslim seller provides and the Muslim market provides meat that is valid for Muslim consumption, right? So this is. And if the meat is imported from a non-Muslim country or purchased from a non-Muslim seller, then it's not permissible to eat it unless one of two conditions is met. One of the two conditions.
What are they?
Hey, I will mention the conditions.
Right.
You can verify that the meat comes from an animal properly slaughtered according to Islamic law, if this is possible. Mm-hmm. And generally it is not possible. When you buy meat from a non-Muslim, how can you verify? Because he brings the meat from a slaughterhouse.
Yes.
No one knows who... Obviously. What was there? Who slaughtered? Was it, electrocuted and killed by machine or by a human hand? Okay, no one knows, okay? So if it is verifiable and if you can make sure that the meat comes from an animal that was properly and Islamically slaughtered by a Muslim man, meeting all the conditions, that's okay, even if the seller is a non-Muslim.
Mm.
But that's generally not.
Yes.
And the second condition is the importer or supplier is a Muslim, in which case you may assume, without the need for certainty, that he has ensured the legitimacy.
You don't need to verify it?
Yeah, when it was imported by a Muslim, there is, but this is a controversial issue.
Yeah, but some Muslims are practicing
Muslim.
And some Muslims just pay lip service. So shouldn't we actually research whether these Muslims were the, for example, the carriers, basically?
Muslims are Muslims when they are practicing. I mean, I think it's in the heart of the individual. that when you talk about a Muslim, you talk of someone who is real Muslim, who is submissive to Islam, who is obedient,
yes,
who practices Islam in the real sense. And in that case, of course, there is a very strong chance that he might have made sure that the meat is halal, okay?
Another relevant question, Sheikh, very quick one before the break, is that you mentioned it actually within your words. I just picked it up from there. If some of the animals have been slaughtered or are slaughtered, in fact, by the machines, is that okay? Like, according to the laws, basically, yeah. Islamic laws. Or should the humans actually sacrifice the animals legitimately?
I think in this time and age, it's not kind of possible to manually slaughter the animals, because you need a lot of...
So it's permissible?
Yes.
Machine is slaughtering
workforce.
Is machine.
Yeah, machine. But the thing is that the machine slaughtered animals, that very machine must be handled, must be turned on, and must be handled by a Muslim individual. He should monitor, he should control it and handle. I mean, the term
of
handle
course.
Is. So if this is the case, then there's no problem. But, okay, certain conditions must be observed, as you rightly mentioned. Okay, the takbir must be said, the direction must be observed, that this animal should be slaughtered in the direction of Qibla. And then all the, you know, conditions that are mentioned in the Book of Islamic Laws, Tawzi'h al-Masail,
yes,
must be taken into consideration.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Let's take another break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Stay with us.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javed, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javed, does the presence of sunscreen on the ablutionary body parts hamper or hinder the valid performance of the wudu?
Right. This is a very difficult question, because it depends on the individual himself or herself, right? Some people apply sunscreen or lotion and they know that there is still lotion on their skin, and that lotion is present on the skin. It has not been absorbed, you see. It is, when you touch it, there is still some kind of oil or grease left on the skin. So one knows that the grease forms the barrier. So it differs from one lotion, from one sunscreen to another. Some of them are water friendly. They allow the water to permeate and reach the skin.
Yes.
So in that case, we cannot give a general and comprehensive answer to this question.
I see.
So if the sunscreen or lotion has been absorbed into the skin and the surface of the skin is free from any greasy or oily layer, that in the layer that prevents water from reaching it, then wudu is valid, because there's no grease left. There's no, let's say it has completely disappeared or maybe evaporated. I'm not sure I'm using the right word. I'm no. But if a visible layer of cream or ointment or lotion remains that blocks water from reaching the skin, it must be removed before performing wudu.
I see.
Because there should not be any kind of barrier whatsoever, whether it is lotion, whether it is cream, or any kind of ointment. And one has to make sure before making wudu that there is no such barrier.
I see.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to your own program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Javed, the host of this program, and our guest speaker, Sheikh Javed. We are signing off. Thank you very much for listening.
محيي مميت الأرض.